It's another episode of Euro Not the 92. It's the penultimate episode of the Euro edition of this podcast. We will be very soon returning to our normal circumstances with the National League season looming large. And as quickly as it finished, it's coming out quickly again. But myself and Tom Mitchell are back again to give you more of the UEFA European Championship news. A dramatic week of football, which may have left us quite a bit overloaded, some more than others. But one thing's for sure, we're greatly helpful to be here once again for another episode of wonderful non-league drip, and also covering the latest from the excellent and exciting. Now we've reached the climax of the probably the most stunning competition we've ever seen for international football. And that's not just about the Copa America having a Clásico final between Brazil and Argentina. Well, that's quite remarkable. The European Championships in this shore, these shores, have pulverized our minds this week. We're going to dig right into it. But before that, I need to do a couple of things. First of all, let's just make sure we get Tom involved in the show. Tom, it's nice to see you again. How are you? And more importantly, try not to spoil anything just yet. We need to make sure we give the viewers the preparation necessary to understand what's been going on. Are you still alive is the most important thing.
Yeah, I'm all fine. What a period it's been, obviously. Yeah, we'll get stuck into it. But I managed to survive, mate. I'm all this Euro fever. I'm still itching for the club football to come back. And obviously, we'll get into some of the fixtures that have been released in the National League. So I've still got my eye on my excitement for league football come back, and still got an eye on all the big news and what's happening in and around the world of the National League and the rest of non-league. But yeah, I'm just about staying alive, mate. It has been some past 48 hours. We'll get on to as to why I feel that way. But yeah, doing well, and yeah, can't wait to talk about all the big games that have been happening in the recent days. It's been some period of football, and of course we'll bring all the non-league news as well.
Absolutely, that's what we're here for. A quick side note. I am doing this episode in the final day of quarantine. Now, strangely enough, I don't update too much on my social media, but when I do, it's more or less the important stuff, and that's not just about what happens on a football pitch. I came into close contact with someone with COVID-19 recently. Thankfully, the NHS app thought that it's a smart idea while in the middle of doing services at Wembley to tell me to go home. And sure enough, that's what happened. I've been in quarantine for 4 days now. It is to be finishing this evening being the Friday night we're recording this, and I will be free to fly from July the 10th to be able to be ready for the final on Sunday. First and foremost, I'm okay. Second of all, yes, COVID's a thing. I would suggest highly get a vaccination or get tested sooner rather than later, even if you don't have symptoms. The bloody thing is a nuisance, and you do not want in any way to get anywhere near anyone who is healthy, and you kind of depend on them if they're going to make you pasta in the afternoon or something like that. So strongly recommend it. Get the vaccine, please. I'm going to do it. I haven't done mine yet. Not because I don't want to. I've been too busy not to be able to do it, even to take minutes out of my day. So a few minor adjustments need to be made. But I urge you all, get vaccinated and get your tests done if you haven't yet already. And then soon after that, get the vaccine, please. I'd rather go back to grounds with you lot in it than not be there, because we are going to very, very soon be doing our ground hopping part of the show when the regular season starts. It's something in the works. We're still planning it, but it'll be something we'll definitely be harnessing on our podcast in the near future during free weekends and during, more importantly, non-league day when that comes around, hopefully very, very soon. Also, Mupai, big shout out to you lot. As always, our Scottish friends, they've had a difficult summer, haven't they? But at the same time, we've got to give them praise for Strange Living in My Head, a great song, great intro to our show. So as always, give them a follow on any of the music on the music listening device of your choice, Spotify, Apple Music, Deezer, God knows what you listen to them on, but give them a bit of love. They're a great band, and they get great support from us. And Faraday Sports, great non-league attire. You want the best drip in the level of your choosing. They're the people to go to, and they're great, they give it to you at great prices as well. So find them off at Faraday Sports on the social media, and FarradaySports.com on their website for more, so you can see what they have offered for you. So, finally, obviously, this week has been a huge week on the Euro front. We are doing this show before the actual final takes place. Now, we have been trying, as you may have figured out, to contain ourselves because we have to update you on everything that's happened this week. But also, there's been a lot of transfer news in the National League. Some more surprising than others. We're going to cover that in this show, along with the fixture release in National League and the Euros, all of that. Some more than others. Even as we were preparing for recording this episode, a lot more has come in. So we're going to be adding that onto the show. So hopefully, if you haven't found out already, you will find out when we find out, which is literally as we're recording this. So things do happen while we're recording, everyone, and we do update you when it happens. Treat it as like a breaking news sort of thing. So yeah, do stick with us if you want to know more. On to the show then. We start obviously with the European Championships, and we last week left you at the quarterfinal stage. We were currently in that little lull between matches after the knockout phase had ended. And my goodness, was it a knockout phase? With the world champions, the French being eliminated, the Dutch getting eliminated, Portugal gone, Germany gone after England's fantastic performance against them. You'd have thought the drama didn't end. But as I will hand you over to Tom, it simply did not end.
Yeah, so we'll start off with the opening quarterfinal, which was Switzerland versus Spain. Ended up being a 3-1 win on penalties for Spain, but over the 120 minutes, it was a 1-1 draw. Zakaria, it was an own goal for Zakaria from Jordi Alba's low, powerful shot, deflected into net, gave Spain an early lead. And yeah, for me, they were in control for a lot of that game, but out of nowhere, it was an awful mistake in the Spanish back line. And Shaqiri got through. It was a great finish from Shaqiri. And, you know, Switzerland always had that threat on the counter-attack. But it was the man who got the assist, Freuler, got sent off 9 minutes later. I have no idea how that was a red card. I'm still baffled to this day. I didn't think there was, much malicious intent in his challenge, and I think a lot of people agreed that it was a very poor decision from Michael Oliver. And people saying that obviously the standards of English referees is just going further and further down, and you know that's just fueled people's argument about that even more. And I'll give credit to Switzerland, they defended really well for the rest of the match, but unfortunately, it was a penalty shootout to forget. One of my favourite players, Fabian Scher, missed a penalty for Switzerland. But it was, missing three spot kicks and coming off the high of winning the penalty shootout against France to the lows of losing against Spanish in the penalty shootout a few days later. Yeah, must have been a real hard one for Switzerland to take. But Spanish did well enough to get through. It wasn't a vintage Spain performance, but claw through it in the end. And later on that night, it was in the second quarterfinal, Belgium, Italy. And this one was a cracker of a game. I'll tell you what, the Italians for me deservedly got through in the end with a 2-1 win over Belgium. It was a first half to forget for the Belgians with Barella and Insigne getting the goals. And what a strike, by the way, by Lorenzo Insigne. It was a vintage run forward the ball, and the Italians have been so confident attacking this tournament. It was an absolutely beautiful curling shot. And, Barella with the opener got the assist for that goal as well. The midfield had a stormer of a half for Italy. And, you know, Belgium, their aging defence really got exposed. But a penalty was a debatable penalty. I think it was a penalty. The Jeremy Doku, for me, the man of match for Belgium, in my opinion. What a star he looks in the making. Such a young talent at 20 years old. And burst through into the box, was clipped down, in my opinion, and Romelu Lukaku made no mistake from the spot. And Lukaku had a an unbelievable chance in the second half, and ball played across to him. Somehow he didn't put it in at the back post. That was the golden chance, really, that got away for Belgium. Italy were resolute. They managed the game well. Some people thought they were cheating a bit too much. It's one of those ones, if that's not your country, you'll moan about that. But if you are, if that was your country doing that, I think you'd deep down be loving it. It was classic Italian game management. And, you know, they're through to the semi-finals to play Spain. So the next next day was an unbelievable night in the end for England. But we'll get onto that shortly. It was Denmark who played the first quarterfinal of the Saturday, and they defeated Czech Republic 2-1. It was a controlling first half from the Danes. Delaney and Dolberg were the goals, and the pick of the goals being that Dolberg goal, where it was Joachim Mahler's unbelievable delivery from the left, and just the awareness of Dolberg to time his run and the composed finish. He's been a real standout for Denmark in this tournament, as well as Mahler. So it was fitting that them two linked up for a goal. But credit to Czech Republic, didn't give up. And Patrick Schick, who's been one of the star players for them, really good finish, crossed from the right-hand side and just sort of hit it with the inside of his right foot and just crept past Schmeichel into his right-hand corner. You know, he felt it was game on, but Denmark managed it really well. Czech Republic didn't really have too many threatening chances. I thought it was going to be more of an onslaught for Czech Republic, but again, they just edged Denmark just edged Czech Republic out in the end. And of course, England had a stormer of a Saturday night, defeating Ukraine 4-0 to play Denmark in the semis. We got to the perfect start. Raheem Sterling just drifting inside, playing a lovely ball through to Harry Kane. Couldn't miss, and he's found his form massively now. And, you know, I thought England had a lot of control during that first half, but there was a period towards the end where Ukraine did have some good moments. You know, they used their left-hand side really well, and we were struggling with that at times, but mostly we did have control in the game. The message from Gareth Southgate was just to stay calm and get those early goals to really kill it off. And we did. We got two inside the first 5 minutes. And it was straight away in the second half, got a free kick. Luke Shaw, an outstanding delivery to Harry Maguire, who headed it home. And then it just got even better for England 4 minutes later. Luke Shaw with another assist, top quality delivery from left-hand side. And Harry Kane was there to head through under the keeper's legs. It could have maybe been... It could have been a save if the keeper maybe got his feet better. But I think Kane and Ferguson headed down on the ground really well. And England were just having a whale of a time. And Jordan Henderson sealed the game off. Corner kick from Mason Mount. And Henderson finally scoring a goal for England. It was a very long wait for Jordan Henderson. But after 62 appearances at that time, met Mason Mount's corner near post brilliantly. And it was just a controlled England performance. And, you know, it just showed the culture that Gareth Southgate setting in. And it set up a semi-final with Denmark. And I'll let Arvid now talk about the semi-finals, because it's two unbelievable semi-finals that, you know, no one's ever going to forget.
Well, he's right. There's every reason for me to tell you about those two games. And they didn't disappoint. England... Denmark, Italy and Spain. We'll start with Italy, Spain, because I was first. And to stress, I was there up to a point in the day. And the atmosphere, I actually was able to hear the national anthems. And yes, the Italians, as many will have, you probably testified to, they do sing it as passionately as you hear it on TV. It is loud when the Azzurri sing as one. The Spaniards didn't look nervous. I think there was more just a collective calm in the ranks as they stepped on the Wembley surface under a somewhat cloudy evening. But nevertheless, the game sparked into life in the first half. It was quite a close affair, a couple of chances both sides. It was more in the second half where things started to liven up a bit more. And it was thanks to Federico Chiesa. He had been probing and teasing the Spanish back line. The Italians were more prominent on the counter-attack. than the Spanish were. The Spanish were just not able to really create chances. You had the, obviously one or two. Sergio Busquets coming close in the first half. They had a few early upset pieces. They didn't make the most of them. They just seemed to... Italian experience was helping them in the area, on the aerial front. They were good on the ground. In the second half, though, yeah, Chiesa's shine came good. A lovely counter attack. Saw Chiesa receive the ball on the edge of the 80-yard box. He sort of relaxed a little bit before taking a touch out of his feet, bending it round Garcia and Laporte to find the top corner of the Spanish net. That looked to be the winning goal, 15 minutes from time for the Italians. Suddenly, however, Spain responded. Gerard Moreno coming close to a header that was flashing from across, that was flashing across the face of goal. It looked to have been a simple header for him to score, but unfortunately, he put it lit. He just could not get any contact on it. And it was one of those missed opportunities for Spain. They wouldn't miss the next one, however. Alvaro Morata, the hero and the villain of the piece when it comes to the Euros this year in particular. His opportunity came right at the very end, near 5 minutes towards the final whistle, where he picked up the ball inside the box after a lovely bit of intricate play, typical of the Spanish, 1-2s on the edge of the area. And then Morata was free to roll it past Donnarumma to make it 1-1. It was a stalemate during the 30 minutes of extra time, however, as there was no extra response in normal time either. And it went all the way to the shootout because neither side looked intent on giving one another any more hammer blows. The Italians were happy to go to penalties. The Spanish never looked like a side that were comfortable enough to be able to take the game back to Italy and looked laboured as well. More of the shenanigans seem to have continued into the toss, which is the most high-profile moment of the semi-final. That moment being between the two captains, Jordi Alba of Barcelona and Juventus's Giorgio Chiellini. The referee, Felix Brick, had obviously to decide the toss. He needed to determine what end they were going to take the shootout and what team would kick first. We know nothing more than what the two players know, but Chiellini had picked a specific colour. And Alba picked a specific colour. It was blue or white, and the coin specifically had each colour. It showed that Chiellini had picked... I can't testify for either, but it looks like Chiellini had managed to force the referee to point towards the side the Italian fans were based, so who would kick in that direction. Jordi Alba wasn't best pleased about it, obviously, when they made the second toss, as Chiellini joyfully played along with the situation. The second toss went in favour of the Italians again. They would kick first. Seemingly confident, Chiellini obviously hugged Jordi Alba. Whether that led to some dissension in the Spanish camp, we'll never know. Somehow, though, it did seem to play mind games with the Spanish team. Italy, having kicked first, missed first. It was a very, very bad penalty miss as well. Bear with me, I have to drag back to Tuesday night. First up was Mauro Locatelli, who was comfortable in all tournament. Had a great performance against Switzerland. Had some sort of fire lit up his backside after some good matches in the competition. But hadn't played the last two games. Missed his first spot kick. Even though Simon saved it. Simon had saved a shootout in the previous shootout against Switzerland, as Tom mentioned to you a few minutes ago. Dani Olmo did no better for Spain. Couldn't convert his penalty for literally, I don't know how far it's gone, but it went quite a way up into the Wembley air, his penalty. So he remained 0-0. Andrea Belotti would score the first spot kick of the shootout for Italy. Gerard Moreno following up before a streak of four, really. Leonardo Bonucci, defender, very accustomed to see them taking some so early in the shootout. Here's one found in the back of the net. Sergio Alcantara, calm as ever, despite not making much of a difference in the tournament, slotting one home. Well, Federico Bernardeschi, I remember his shot very well, lashing it into the top corner with confidence as well. Unai Simon went the right way, but just couldn't stop it. The decisive penalty, however, was Alvaro Morata's. He could not beat Gigi Donnarumma, who got down and stopped the Juventus striker from giving Spain the chance to restore parity. Jorginho slotted home with relative comfort and a hop, skip and a jump as ever. The decisive spot kick. The Italians through to the final. And again, you can't fault them for it. They've been the bridesmaids of many years in the Euros, having failed to win it in 2012 and 2000. They've been semi-finalists numerous times. And safe to say there's a lot of joy in them, like sort of Mancini and Vialli, who celebrated it like it was literally heaven. I can't blame them for it. It felt so good for Italy, and the fans that night were absolutely jubilant. There were a few England fans there as well, teasing the two sides as we went into the second semi-final. And sure enough, the atmosphere at Wembley, while I was stuck inside my own house, I could imagine it was rocking. The songs of Sweet Caroline, it's Football's Coming Home, Padilla Skinner in the ground, Paul Gascoigne, David Beckham. Yes, even Boris Johnson was in there. But at this point, could you really give a crap? No, because we had to focus on the task at hand as Englishmen and women. Simple job. The Danes have been one of the more, you know, strong units in the competition and have been earmarked as such ever since the unfortunate and somewhat harrowing circumstances of Christian Eriksen. Obviously, since then, he's been recovering in Denmark, and he's invited to the final, by the way. He's been invited along with his wife and his family, with the six medics that assisted him on that day against Finland. More importantly, though, it was about Denmark trying to do justice, not only for their tournament and for Eriksen, but to be able to relive memories of Euro 92. Obviously, they won the competition before. It looks that way when Mikael Damsgaard smashed in a fantastic free kick in the 34th minute, if I'm not wrong, 30th minute. Quite the hit. England's war couldn't deal with it, and it stunned Wembley and gave the Danes, who were in attendance, an absolute party. It did not take long for England to respond in that game. Having dominated the match up to that point before conceding, Raheem Sterling missed a point-blank shot, which it wasn't exactly a miss that you'd be surprised about. Kasper Schmeichel had every bit to do with it. Big star jump, typical of his father, denying him his first opportunity at an equaliser. England didn't let up, though. As soon as they got back up the other end, Bukayo Saka drove in after a lovely pass from Harry Kane. He managed to take his time because he knew Schmeichel, if he plays, comes out, he'll get there first. Played a very good ball across the six-yard box. Schmeichel, not sure what to do with it, let it pass him. And Simon Kjær decided, well, instead of Raheem, I'm not going to let Raheem beat me to it, so I will get there first. He kind of, more or less, put it into his own net, giving England the equaliser they needed, and it was ratchets inside Wembley again. It stayed this way, though, until the second half. England continued to create chance after chance after chance after chance. I remember towards the end, there were crosses flying in, England coming close. Harry Maguire having two good headers. Both one of them was saved in the same fashion by Schmeichel into the one he stopped from, if I remember, from Mount in the FA Cup final, where he palmed it away in almost the same way. It was quite remarkable. Then we go into extra time. England still looked in control, only making the one change at the time with Jack Grealish coming on in the normal period. So Southgate didn't look to have panicked, while Kasper Hjulmand brought on an abundance of players, the likes of Daniel Vass, Yusuf Poulsen, Christian Norgaard, Matthias Jensen and Joachim Andersen all coming on. They did lose Andreas Christensen, though, the key man in the back three that they already had. Having lost him, they asked Andersen to probably try and step up to that level. He simply couldn't, unfortunately. England continued the pressure, kept on going and showing as much enthusiasm to try and get back into the game and maybe even more go on to win it. Raheem Sterling then becomes the focal point of the competition again. Now, he's already England's top scorer in Euro 2020 and would have been on four if he scored that. But it's a moment that's harrowed everyone this week. He drives into the box after receiving the ball on the far side. There are two balls on the pitch at the time. However, the referee's missed it. Nevertheless, Raheem gets to the box. And then he's taken out by not only one, by two players. Joachim Mahler's challenge was the one that seems to be the more difficult, more conclusive one, according to Paul van Berkel, the VAR official, as his knee clatters into the side of Raheem Sterling's leg before second contact on the hip forces him down. And obviously, Paul van Berkel felt that Danny McAlee, referee on the pitch at the time, who is Dutch, decided that it was only right to give the penalty and stick with the original decision when the VAR checked it. So England got that spot kick. Harry Kane stepped up as ever, and he's done these big moments before. He only knows them too well. despite, well, a laser pen to the eye, which obviously UEFA are investigating, will to England's fans about. I don't know why that's a thing, and it's a scoundrel thing to do. But Schmeichel, still not perturbed by it, did save the initial spot kick. However, couldn't stop Harry Kane from scoring the equaliser. The joy of joys as Wembley once again. I'm quite sure registered a mini earthquake when he scored that second goal. England took the lead in the 105th minute. It went all the way to half-time and extra time. And despite Jonas Vind coming on, being the last throw of the dice by Kasper Hjulmand, Denmark really did not look like they had anything left. They looked spent. They looked lethargic, ran out of energy. It just seemed that this game, not necessarily a game too far, but more or less a game that they felt they just didn't have as much for after the 115th minute. And there are credit to the competition. England just gave the control and didn't seem to let up at all. Final whistle goes. Sweet Caroline blasts through the Wembley air. And we have made it into into the European Championship final. For the first time in 55 years, England are in the final. And we don't know how to feel right now. Well, I don't, but I'll let Tom use his emotions to explain how he feels right now.
Oh, it's one of those ones where it's just like it's stuff you've dreamt about, and the amount of times we've all been let down by England, and you think, I'm just sick of it now. Just every tournament, can't be bothered. We know it's going to be the same old, same old. But this is Gareth Southgate's England, and it's just something about the spirit he's created, and just the man that Gareth Southgate is. It's really translated into how the team plays, how the team deals with pressure, and I feel like we're so united with this team now. It's just incredible. I can't believe it. It feels like it's so fit as well. 25 years since the heartache of Euro 96, being played here in England, and having that semi-final heartbreak against Germany in Wembley, and now finally we get the chance to play in a major final, and it's Southgate's redemption. 25 years since obviously that agonising Euro 96 penalty miss for him as well against Germany, and then it's another 55 years on since we got to the major final, obviously, and which was at Wembley, funny enough, as well in the World Cup, as we all know, and it's one of those ones where it's for England to be in a major final, man. It's just unbelievable, isn't it? The buzz and excitement I have for Sunday, that's just second to none. And for the nation to be united like this, and for the team, like the team to play the way they did in those last, 4 minutes of that semi-final. If that was me out on the pitch, my legs would have been jelly. But those players, they fit nothing. They fit absolutely nothing. The way we just knocked it about, and the effort that they put in for us this tournament as well, and they've dealt with the pressure, that 0-0 draw against Scotland, there was huge meltdown after that. And obviously, there was some criticism rightly laid at Southgate and the players. I'm not having a go at people who did question that performance, but I felt like some of the reaction was a bit over the top. Maybe I look at myself, maybe my reaction straight off the game was a little bit over the top now. And the way the players have stayed calm and dealt with it, and dealt with the pressure at playing at Wembley as well. And they've seen it as an enjoyment. They love playing for England. That's something it's a team spirit and a group of players that love playing for this country. And now that's filtered through to how the fans feel about the national team again. It's just so glorious to see. And the scenes were incredible at Wembley Stadium, as you mentioned, Ahmed, the Sweet Caroline music. It's just, these are the moments that you live for. And these are the moments that you live for in football. And even if you're not a football fan, you would have been watching that with so much happiness. And it would have meant something to the country doing, something so special and creating history. We might not win it, obviously, but to witness England in a major final since 1966, it isn't just sort of the younger generation like, yourself and I and Ahmed. It's people like my dad's generation, really. My dad was only a small kid. He never got to live, the World Cup final 66 as a teenager. He's only three at a time. So even like for people like my dad, it really meant something that he could really feel that, you know, the experience of finally getting to the final and that feeling, that elation. And it's just, oh, it's incredible, Ahmed. I love this team. I really believe we can go all the way. And, rumour on the street says that, yeah, football is coming home on Sunday night. Don't know if you heard, Ahmed, but there you go.
I'm tempering my expectations until the match happens. But, yes, I can't fault your feelings, Tom, and I can echo those that of those who I know and work with over there who were able to be there on Wednesday night, for both nights, in fact, because they were both incredible evenings. There is a feeling, obviously, around us all that we can get just a bit carried away right now. And to be honest, that's fine. We've not had this feeling even be able to say England are in a final of any kind is something we struggle to imagine even when we wake up in the mornings. We can, like, just for now, until the actual game happens. Because once it kicks off at Sunday at 8 p.m, nothing else in the world will matter. I won't lie to you, my day on Sunday starts really early, and I'm not going to be able to think on, even when I wake up, I'm not going to be able to think about anything else but just the course of how that day's going to go. Result pens. It's depending on the result. But at the same time, whatever happens, happens. And should England succeed, it will probably be the most popular day in this country's history since 1966. If not, it will probably be better to known as the summer we will not forget. And while it will probably play on many people's minds, it's still going to be remembered as a summer to remember. 2018 had its moments, and it will forever have that. But this is different. This is a different time. But we still haven't made it to Sunday yet. And until that comes round, we will have to, as me and Tom are going to do our way, have our own way of preparing for the occasion. Some will have to avoid making too many languished predictions before then. But we will be definitely optimistic, to say the least, for what we hope will be a good outcome. Because the Italians, we know them enough times now for the experience they have, the quality they have up front now. They have a dogged, never say die attitude. They cannot be flat. They're not flattered by any occasion. And then, experience tells you they're not world champions four times for any reason. 2006 side, none of them play, but some of them still have a role in these current players' careers because they will have idolised them. And yes, England have only won the World Cup once and have been unfortunate many times. But something like this summer just feels like different to any other summer, you know? And who knows what may happen on Sunday. I will say nothing more, ladies and gentlemen. But all I can say is, however you follow it, however you watch it, however you listen to it, all I can say is drink it in, enjoy it. And when we record this, the next episode of this, the final episode of Euro 92, we're going to probably dissect it in a way which we normally wouldn't dissect a game. And, well, let's just say we're very excited and I'm very nervous at the same time. Let's just put it that way. Tom, I don't know about you, but I'm just very nervous.
I feel exactly the same. It's like, I'm one minute I'm like, it's coming home. I'm like, I was there. I'm buzzing. Then I actually think of, Chiesa cutting in. And I start to get worried a bit. This Italian team is very good. And as you mentioned, Armin, as well, it's been 15 years since they lifted the World Cup. And that was one of my iconic childhood
memories. That's today.
Memories that.
It's today.
It is, yes, it is. Actually, yeah, it's quite fitting that we're previewing the final today. Yep, 15 years ago, I remember watching that like it was yesterday, that final. And I was actually rooting on Italy as well. I had an Italian kid in my class. And let's just say he did not coming to school on time next day. So I don't blame him at all. None of the teachers did, but yeah. Anyway, like for Italy to not qualify for that unbelievable World Cup that we had in Russia, that must have really hurt for them. Roberto Mancini, what a job he's done. He's a top manager. You know, people can say about the money he had at Man City, but you've seen what he's done in the past. I've really rated Mancini, and I'm not surprised the fact that he's got this Italian team going in the right direction. And now, obviously, there, you know, we talk about obviously England are 90 minutes away from, you know, possibly, you know, winning a major tournament. But Italy felt that pain as well in recent years. So, yeah, it's going to be absolutely massive for them, obviously, as well. And you can see what it means to their fans, the passion that they had, the songs they were singing whilst waiting for the tube. It's all those fantastic videos. It's going to be a great spectacle at Wembley. The two sets of supporters, I hope, respect each other. I'm sure it will be, a real iconic evening. And, yeah, whatever happens for England, we have made history reaching the final. I'm praying we get the job done. I am nervous, but I've got faith. Gareth Southgate is a calm man. One, he's not afraid to make big decisions either, because obviously there's talk of, is Jordan Henderson going to start over Calvin Phillips? It'd be tough because I love Calvin Phillips. And obviously, Declan Rice has been incredible in midfield, but there is talk of that. And, you know, does he drop Saka? But I trust Southgate. You know, there's been decisions I've questioned of him in the past, but he's made all the right ones this tournament. And he's just such a lovely bloke. Like, he's the guy that you just want to root for. He's just one of the good guys. And I just feel so proud to have him as our national team manager. And Gary Neville summed it up perfectly in after the game about Southgate's leadership being a real good example for this country. And I completely agree with that statement from Gary Neville. And I love this group of players. It seemed like such a unite group of players. Jamie Carragher was talking about when he was in England, that atmosphere is a bit spiky. They felt didn't like each other. It was the height of, obviously, all the massive clubs in the Premier League that time being at their peak and all being in the England squad at the same time. But it feels different. Club loyalties are put aside and it's like one big England family. And as I said, and the fans really feel that now. And that's why, you know, everyone in the country has got such a connection to this team. So whatever happens, I'm proud. It's going to be a great final. I think it's going to be some really good football. I love watching both teams their own ways, but I think there's going to be some cagey, nervous moments as well. It's hard to make predictions. I think it's going to be such a close-knit final. Do you know what I said? 90 minutes there, but I wouldn't be surprised if it goes all the way to penalties. I really wouldn't. And, you know, we have a good record in penalties. Last couple of penalty shootouts, we've won, obviously, against Colombia in the World Cup and then Switzerland Nations League. So if it does come to that, I trust Jordan Pickford to deliver the goods again. But who knows what's going to happen on Sunday. It's going to be an amazing occasion. I'm definitely going to be in London to watch it. I've entered to go in the Travel Square fan zone, and I've entered the competition to try and get tickets. Who knows where I'll be watching it. But whatever happens, I'll be in London on Sunday, living it up with all the other England fans, and hoping that it comes home.
Certainly. And like I said, well, however you do it, as Thomas, he's coming into the city to join the party, hopefully, or, you know, share a shoulder or two. Regardless of the outcome, we will definitely be, well, I'll be at Wembley. I know that for sure. And I promise you, it's not going to be the same as any other event. I've done FA Cup finals. I've done Champions League games. There's been matches that have had, like, playoff finals, National League even, that have had so much weight on it. But this is the biggest game this country's seen in 55 years. And it's being held in a place that only knows too well about big moments like those. So if England are going to turn up in this Sunday, they're going to need to properly turn up this Sunday evening. And I hope whatever they do between now and then, it is near perfect as possible. The preparation and the camera, it already is a perfect team spirit, but we all hope that it stays that way even long after the final whistle goes. Well, even when the Premier League season starts, we will still see some of that, I'm sure, living it large. Players who see each other every once in a while. That you know, that meme of Lewandowski and Royce smiling at each other when they first met after Lewandowski left Dortmund comes to mind. There's going to be a few of those this season, I feel. So keep an eye on that one. Enough of the Euros. We will cover more of that after the final next week, and obviously we'll want to keep up with that. If you want to keep up with that, please follow us on NT92Pod and same on Instagram, NT92 underscore. I think it's NT92_pod.
Yep,
I'm not wrong. Thank you. Normally get that right, but so sometimes you do need to remember socials are tricky with the underscores. Same with our email if you want to ask us questions and queries, anything else like that. NT9podcast@not92.com. So you can talk more about the Euros and also anything else that we're about to talk about right now regarding the National League. But yes, while England were obviously preparing at the time for the incredible scenes that took place on Wembley on Wednesday evening, we finally find out who the National League 23 will be playing in the first weeks of the season. And my word, it's going to be a very exciting start to that very season. Fixtures were released at 9 a.m. on Wednesday morning. And one thing's for sure, there's plenty of exciting matches to look forward to when the season does finally get underway. That season, I was just to remind you, North and South are back, more importantly, because we've missed them. And they've been, I'm sure, as I've said previously, they're itching to get going. And their pre-seasons are obviously in full swing. Plenty of signings. We're going to try and get Oliver Spott out of his cave very, very soon so he can help us with the National League South news. So we'll get him on very, very soon, I promise you. We're getting him to improve his confidence in front of a microphone for a start. But he will definitely be back before soon. And Tom will be able to focus on his National League North duties when the Euros are over. So once the Euros are done, we will get back to our old methods of following the leagues. And as always, you're still going to get opinions of every single one of them. And as I've said in last week's show, we're going to get a big fat preview done when we get to the beginning of August. Because the National League starts a little later this year than normal. 21st of August is the first weekend of fixtures. And a week before is National League North and South on the 14th. So there's plenty of excitement in the North and the South club specifically. And a week before those leagues start, we'll do a proper preview on this podcast. So keep an eye out closer to their time for when we go live with that one. But Tom, let's look over these fixtures because first and foremost, there's a fair few big matches on the opening weekend. This time last season, we were looking at these games thinking, well, not this time particularly, but at a time when the season was about to start, it was September when we were talking about when the fixtures came out. It was quite a strange time. We were thinking, well, the pandemic screwed everything. The season's finished later this year. We're starting in October now. So we're not going to be having that usual sunshine, hot, warm sunshine on August day feeling. This year, we're going to have that feeling, thank goodness. And yeah, a few big fixtures, massive games for plenty of these sides. Wait, for you, what catches your eye in the first weekend of the National League?
So I'll start off with the National League itself. For me, I'm looking forward to Barnet v Notts County. I think Harry Kewell's first game, in front of the home fans at the Hive, and they'll make a racket. And to welcome Ian Birchall's Notts County, who I think, for me, they're definitely going to be up there this season. I wouldn't be surprised they finish top three at least. So I think that one's going to be a great spectacle, and I'm interested to see what style Harry Kewell's going to bring to Barnet, and obviously see if he gets the right backing over the summer and how Barnet will set up for the season. That's certainly one to look out for. Another one in the National League for me is Bromley Grimsby. I think that's going to be a great game. Obviously, for the obvious reasons of Grimsby just come down. Again, very interesting out there. Going to adapt to life. I think I do have them as adapting better out the two relegated sides. But my word, Bromley, that's a tough away trip for them. Obviously, I don't think Bromley will be licking their wounds a lot after last season. I think they're thinking, well, it didn't quite work for us in the playoffs, but it's a good achievement we got in the playoffs. You won't get that heartbreak like Torquay had, for example, or Stockport as well. I think Bromley, it'd be a little bit easier then to move on. I think they're going to be ready and firing for the upcoming season. So, Andy Woodman's side, for me, I wouldn't be surprised they're competing up there again. It's a big game for them to start off with. And lastly, the three will stand out between the National League. Wrexham Yeovil's another one. We spoke about Yeovil in the last pod, actually, what's going to happen with them, and would they maybe get takeover in the next few months? Possibly. We're not sure about that. But obviously, eyes from Mars are on Wrexham. I'm confident Notts County and Stockport will definitely be up there in that top three. But I think Wrexham, a team that could certainly join them up there. And, you know, it's open against Yeovil. That's two big names as well in the National League coming up against each other. So that's one I'm thoroughly looking forward to. Yeah, obviously, August 21st. Start for National League. Just having a look at the National League North. For me, I'm actually really looking forward to seeing how Gloucester do. So they're away at Southport on the opening day. I think a real good, solid National League North side. Obviously, Gloucester had they were really pushing to go up. They're in a fantastic position to get out the National League North. But for obvious reasons, they couldn't. So, you know, obviously it's a big sum for them, gathering themselves together, sort of starting as they left off. And obviously had the managerial change as well with James Rowe. So I think they adapted okay, though, since Paul Groves came in. And I think he'll do a really good job this season. It's a tough start for them at Southport, but I think Gloucester can cope that really well. Another one as well is York versus Kidderminster. That's obviously York. Not just going to be one of the teams that are going to be up there, but obviously I want to see them play in their new stadium. They're actually playing Newcastle in pre-season. So that's a big game for them pre-season already, for the fans to get used to that new stadium of theirs. But I'm looking forward to obviously seeing, you know, play in their new stadium for a league game. And Kidderminster's going to be a great fixture to start off with. Again, two sides I could see competing up against, you know, coming up against each other and competing with each other as well for league positions this season. So I think that was a big one that caught my eye straight on the National League North fixture list. Yeah, for the South, lastly, I would certainly say Dartford's trip to St Albans is one that I'm thoroughly looking forward to. Again, I think Dartford, one of those teams who didn't want the season really to end. They were having a fantastic season. But St Albans as well, I think they're a team that, for me, are developing well and I think could certainly give Dartford a run for their money again at the top end of the National League South this season. So what better start to see two of possible promotion contenders coming up against each other. So that's going to be a great game for me in the National League South. So yeah, they're sort of the real big ones that stood out to me in the fixture list for all three National League divisions.
Excellent. I think we've got a real thrilling start to next season on the cards. And I, for one, feel very excited that both the North and the South are back. Because last season felt very bare. We obviously we all discussed very vividly back in February, March time, when the suspension of the voiding, in fact, of the National League North and South was made, and the National League itself continued to the virtue of, and in somewhat frustration to the other clubs. There was a collective disappointment that the National League didn't follow suit. And to the benefit, obviously, of Sutton and Hartlepool, both sides went up to the League Two instead, with the two sides in Southend and Grisby coming down. We've actually touched on Southend already. And yeah, as Chubb said, Southend's tie in the first tie in the National League is one of, you know, great interest. Away to King's Lynn. It is, it's not a far journey if you think about it. For them, they're quite far out in the east of London, which, so it's not a long journey now on the train. But they're not going to go too far up to East Anglia, and they haven't ever, I don't think they've played Kings Lynn in a little while. So this will be the first time the two sides will have met in this level. So quite exciting there. We spoke about Grisby already, and yeah, very exciting time. Hopefully Andy Wimmer can get the best out of a side which have let go of a few of their old stars, like Sir Raymond, Holland and Kizzy, to bigger and better things. Who knows what they'll adapt with, especially with what is currently being recruited at Bromley. In terms of the National League, I like the look of Stockport Dagenham. It was one of the games that upended Stockport's promotion hopes last season, and they were very keen to beat Dagenham to get into the top three, possibly threaten Sutton towards the end. But Dagenham are, I'm sure, a side that will recruit well under Peter Taylor. Darren McMahon, apologies, Peter said it was the last manager. Darren McMahon will definitely recruit well. He will look to improve that team tenfold. Torquay United will start again against Altrincham. Altrincham, I think, have adapted well back at the National League at the first time of asking. Now it's to see if they can improve that. And they had a good start to last season. They were in the top seven for a little while, but fell off towards the mid-Christmas time period. And it was a very difficult time then after that for them to maintain that form. I still remember Connor Hampson striking a last-minute equaliser. Best goal I've seen all in my time covering the leagues. Definitely one worth looking back on if you have the chance. Wrexham and Notts County is also an early league tie, which I find to be very exciting, which is being covered on BT Sport. Speaking of BT Sport, let's just have a quick diversion very quickly, because I'm very keen to let you know that BT have announced today the matches that they'll be covering in the first few weeks of the National League season. Ones that will, I'm sure, be of controversy to some fans, but some excitement to others. So, as I mentioned, Bromley Grisby, as Tom mentioned, being the highlight game, Grisby will be put on the TV cameras very first time on BT Sports since 2016, if I'm not wrong. So they'll be playing Bromley at 5:20. Most of these kickoffs will be pushed back to accommodate for BT cameras. But yeah, 5:20 Bromley Grisby on the 21st. The following week, Southend against Stockport also at 5:20 on the 28th. A Monday night game that has been scheduled in Wales, and it will be Wales Wrexham Notts County, which on its own is a massive football match. But that has been put back to Monday, August the 30th. So two games for the price of one over one weekend. It's a bank holiday as well. So no wonder they're putting back another match on Monday night. If I'm not wrong as well, let me just check the fixtures one more time. There is a bank holiday fixture list. So you have Notts County Torquay on the Saturday the 28th of August. That's a huge game. And then you have Wrexham Notts County on Monday night. Remarkable fixture. Yeovil Halifax on the 4th of September is a late kickoff. Most of these are. Kingsland against Dagenham and Redbridge. Weymouth against Dover on the 18th of September. Chesterfield Torquay 5:20 on the 25th of September. 2nd of October, you have Eastleigh Boreham Wood. Tuesday, October the 5th, Wilston versus Solihull Moors. If it's half as epic as the last time they went to Wilston, it'll be interesting. Maidenhead versus Working, 23rd of October. Altrincham against Solihull Moors, 26th of October. Barnet versus Aldershot on October the 30th. Those are the first 12 live games that BT will cover next season. Is every single team in the National League, every single team's been covered in the first 12 matches next season. That stuns me, Tom, honestly. Wrexham Notts County, early on in the season, on a Monday night, that's sure to draw in quite a crowd, especially for the fact that this will be the first time Wrexham will have fans in the ground for a big game like this. Like, not they obviously have a game, I believe if I'm not wrong, tracking back to the opening day, they'll be at home to Yeovil, but it'll be the first massive game they'll have in front of fans. Surely that's going to draw an atmosphere in or not, or something like that.
Oh, definitely. They had a really good clash as well at the back end of last season, where we were hoping Wrexham fans would be allowed into that one. Didn't quite work out. Notts County got a big victory there, and me and Bertrand will be looking to repeat that. But yeah, some real big away test already in the first month of the season for Notts County. I spoke about the Barnet away game, the opening day, but you know, yeah, Wrexham away Monday night, fans are going to be up for it. And obviously, Phil Parkinson's the new manager there as well. That's an interesting appointment. You know, Phil Parkinson didn't really end well from at Sunderland, but he has got a track record of promotion. That's pretty big name for Wrexham to get. On a 12-month rolling contract. So you'd be under pressure to get promotion straight away, and be interested to see now how he's going to strengthen that team. But that's going to be a fascinating matchup. That's going to be a pretty weekend as well, because obviously 2 days before you've got Southend Stockport, which I think is going to be another great game. Stockport, obviously, definitely going to be, I'd say, a lot of people's favourites to win the league, the backing they got, and then the performances they put into the back end last season under Simon Ross. So just a little bit unlucky against Hartlepool in the end, just fell a bit short. And Southend, obviously, the club that I call them bananas club last season, didn't know what was going to happen with Southend. You know, obviously fans a lot of instability there. So that, you know, fans are now accepted their fate. They're going to be a national club. And I think Southend's looking for a bit of stability. Obviously, it'd be brilliant for them to get back up straight away. But at least if they could compete well this season, it'd be something. What better way to test themselves than against, you know, a top team like Stockport County. So, yeah, as you know, as you touched upon, Ahmed, it's great that a lot of clubs have got fixtures already sorted for them, and obviously nationally, you know, Beat Sport want to make it fair for all National League clubs, you know, to have as many equal games as possible. But yeah, another game I quite liked what you said as well was Chesterfield Torquay last weekend in September. I think that's going to be another great one, because you know, with Torquay, I'm interested to see how they start off the season. They will get, you know, little idea how Torquay are going to fare this season by September. Obviously, anything could change, but I just want to see their reaction after that playoff heartbreak. And you know, away trip Chesterfield, they could be both flying by then. You know, that's a team that are building very well under James Rowe, and I wouldn't be surprised if Chesterfield competing, you know, definitely to get at least in the top seven this season, if not try and get themselves a top three spot, put themselves in that mix. So I think that one's going to be cracking games. They're sort of the real big standout fixtures that caught my eye off BT's, obviously, TV fixture list that came out today. But yeah, I've got to admit, August looks a cracker, doesn't it? The first batch of games they got in August. For, yeah. I can't wait. Rub my hands together. Already thinking about watching them live. And yeah, it should be some fascinating ties. And hopefully great season, which obviously, as you mentioned, Ahmed, we'll touch upon nearer to the season, obviously, when it comes around. It's a late start, which is an interesting one. Obviously, also finishes in May, so wonderful. So it's going to be more of a regular thing now, maybe for National League to finish in May, who knows, or it's just a temporary thing. Obviously, because, you know, last season we ended pretty late. I'm not sure, but very much looking forward to new season. We've talked about all the Euros hype, but yeah, seeing these fixtures just makes me more excited. New season coming next month.
Absolutely. And like you, I'm excited to see what next season will offer. It's the same trend as well with the North and the South. They also finish in May, which is good because I feel like it lacks something if it doesn't finish in the same month as the Premier League or the EFL. Obviously, previous to this past season, always finished in April, which was a strange thing in my opinion. Maybe the old occasion where it finished in May, but still, I'm excited. I hope that we get some thrilling football to watch next season on the pitch. Nothing to help. No off the pitch shenanigans, please. And hopefully we'll have fans in longer periods as well, because we had that stint in late December time when the National League North and South fans were at some games, I think, during the Trophy and the Vase in late December. If we can have that, that'll be fine. Anything more than that, though, we're pushing our luck, to be honest. Touching on the North very quickly, Tom, one of the main things that I've found from the early rounds of the competition, or the first week of the competition on the 14th of August, is that from last season, we knew Gloucester were one of the big sides. Kidderminster Harriers have brought back Mark Yates, obviously, who was on a little bit of a loan deal to Solihull Moors when they were going through a stage where they needed a new manager after moving on from James Shaw. What do you hope for in terms of the National League North next season? I mean, you spoke about Gloucester already, but do you expect more sides to give them a run for their money? Obviously, we're calling it a bit so early, but do you feel they're going to get a few sides giving them a harder time next season? They had it quite easy early on.
Yeah, I think obviously the two big standout sides were Gloucester and Fylde for the season was closed and put to one side in the end. I could see Fylde being up there again this season challenging. I think they'll be going nowhere. But Kidderminster, I could see them really pushing Gloucester this season. I think Gloucester are very strong, and I think I could see them coming out the traps quickly once again, like they did last season. I think it's just too much strength in that squad not to. Although it could be proved wrong, but I just wouldn't be surprised, and that's what I think will happen. But yeah, I think we're going to get some interesting challenges, and I think Kidderminster could join Fylde in that pack. I'll definitely give a shout out to Chester as well. I think Anthony Johnson's and Bernard Morley will be looking to come back stronger. And obviously, in their last full season, they were in the 1920 season. They had the playoff heartbreak, and then obviously the shenanigans last season. Chesterfield, did they miss a big window to go up? But I don't think they have. I think they're going to be a real strong side next season. And obviously, I put sort of Chorney in the same bracket as Fylde. Obviously, they're more recent sides that came down. And Chorley, as we know, the heroics they had last season, the FA Cup. I think now they've had that FA Cup run. Who knows, they may do it again. But I think that's another side I'd be keeping an eye on. You know, they struggled sort of early on in the National League North and in the state, you know, the months that were played last season. They really got themselves together and they sort of aligned their league form with their impressive cup form. And I think that's going to be a real spring in Chorley's step. Another team I would also say is Gateshead. I would say look out for them and York as well. So there's some good competitive teams. I'll probably say maybe more York and Gateshead for the playoffs. I suppose you're specifically looking at really, really challenging Gloucester. I'd say Fylde at Kidderminster, I'd put on that list. Chester certainly is an outskirts name. And, you know, Brackley, I thought did strong in the months that were played last season. So can they replicate that as well? But yeah, some big clubs, as I mentioned, like Boston, Chorley, York, Gateshead, Hereford, of course. Obviously, coming off the back of that heartbreak. So it's going to be, I think, a real competitive season in the National League North, and one that I think is going to have some twists and turns. I could maybe see Gloucester starting off really well, but maybe as a season goes, we're interested to see how Gloucester cope with maintaining a Chelsea. I haven't really seen how they could maintain a massive run of wins, you know, throughout the whole massive season. So I think that's going to be a factor that I'm interested in seeing. So yeah, I'd say Fylde, Kidderminster, the big challenges, maybe Chester could break into that bracket as well. So yeah, I think it's one that a lot of National League North fans are really looking forward to seeing. And like now it's obviously, you mentioned Ahmed, it's the weight is that the National League North and South clubs have had, I think it's going to be itching to get back out there and playing league football in front of their own fans. I think they're just licking their lips thinking about it. So I think we're going to see some real great games early on. And yeah, hopefully looking to maybe go to a few as well. So that should be great.
Lovely, Tom. Don't say we don't love you here, yeah? We've given you like an early preview of who we think could be a threat in the hunt for promotion into the National League for 22-23. So, don't say we don't love you here. I look at the South very quickly, like just to throw a few hat names in the hat. I would say Dartford, as Tom said, is a team I'd look out for next season. They've recruited well. They've got a few big sides as well to play in pre-season. Dulwich Hamley have looked good as well. They've been very forthwith with their pre-season training and their recruitment. I mentioned Jack Holland earlier on. He moved across Kent into London. Now he's playing at Champion Hill with Dulwich Hamley. So very experienced player. Could be the difference maker in that team next season. Ebbsfleet United, I think they're strongest financially in the league down there. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of strict rules, but also they do carry quite a lot of experience, released a number of players and have played a few friendlies in this time between the shutdown and the beginning of pre-season. They're definitely a team I think you want to keep an eye on because, you, as I like to say, having the biggest budget does play into your advantage and they will use that money quite well. The owner is spending not freely, but he will spend where necessary. And a lot of the squad that is there is, I feel, not necessarily National League South. It can be a National League team, but needs, I think, one or two more bodies to be able to seriously compete. Our old friendly Birchnell, who came on a while ago, with Hemel Hempstead, has brought in a few players as well, and he's done very well to prepare that side. Latuna's obviously now playing on 3G, so if they're not careful, they may do the Sutton thing. We wish them well. If they want to get lofty quickly, though, just be careful. That's the best suggestion I can tell you. However, they're going 3G as well this season, so they are helping the community and giving the chance, obviously, not only for themselves to play more matches during the season and save a lot of money, but it obviously opens up the opportunity for the pitch to be hired out and for the clubs to... for other teams to use it. So, as I've mentioned previously, having Sutton gone up to the National League to the Football League, they're getting a grass pitch laid. They've had to start training elsewhere instead. On top of which, there's also the community aspect. You have now got to move all these teams to a new base. It's a complicated thing. For Hamlet Hempstead, it's going to be the opposite. They get to draw money in also by hiring, obviously hiring and also letting other teams use the surface. And at free, develop talent. It's a key thing that you give teams a chance to adapt to, adapt to playing on surfaces like this. They will probably find it more frequently in the National League that some teams may switch their surfaces. Methyr Town, for example, who are at an even lower level, were denied that initially, but then were eventually given the approval from Sporting England, who recalled that idea, as they now realise how stupid it was. And now they can play on 3G. So the benefits of 3G are being seen across non-league. It still bewilders us how the EFL haven't caught on with the idea yet. But you can't, a leopard never changes his spots. But hopefully, Hamlet Hempstead will have some success with the 3G pitch next season. Hungerford Town were last season's surprise package. Early on, surprising our regular National League South pundit, Oliver Smart, who for a little while was eating or mincing his own words after Hungerford pulled off a fantastic start and being in the top seven for a very long time, teasing first place even after getting a promotion from the league below. Obviously, they would have been one of the few sides to have been disappointed by last season being curtailed. But who knows with them? They can strengthen even further and could be a side worth looking out for. Maidstone, another one of the big clubs in the league who should really be a National League side, in my opinion. They've been in the South now for too long and they will look to get back up to the National League sooner rather than later. Obviously, there's very, very few places in the National League South to go from there up to the National League Premier. They'll do as much as they can, but they probably have, as I've said, one of the stronger teams and for well financially backed clubs, especially with the fan base. They have quite a fan base. So we'll be keen to see how they do in the coming season. Oxford, St Albans, as we've said, St Albans, my goodness. Honestly, they should have been promoted last season if that season finished. They had a strong season. There was a great performance. Ian Allinson has a side and a half to take up to the National League if they were given the chance. But they will have to start again. And I feel they'll get a crack at it this year. They'll give it a right old crack. It'll be difficult with the likes of Dartford and Ebbsfleet chasing them. Having Waterlooville as well. Paul Doswell, that experience he has. That team as well. Can't ignore him. He will definitely want to, going into what I believe is his 29th pre-season as a manager. This man knows no bounds. He really wants to go some way with this team. If they're going to be promotion contenders this season, though, he'll need to take heart from what he did over at his old club. So we'll see what happens. And Tom, you're nodding as I say, so I want to get your thoughts on this. Haven't have a lot of pressure on them this season. They did well last season, obviously, to be in the playoff hunt for a little while. Do you feel Doswell can push them even further this season into the promotion positions?
Yeah, definitely. I think there was some questions. There's a few questions, is Dos the man to take Haven't forward by a couple of fans I've seen. But on the most part, I'm certainly in the camp that he will take them forward. There's a real vision at the club now, I feel, with the 3G pitch, the experience I think that Paul Dosser brings with himself to get players of a certain calibre to get, clubs out of that division. I think he is the man that is not just proven in that league, but one I think Haven will look to take themselves further forward and be a nationally competitive club in the next 3-4 years as well. So they've got a special manager there, Haven Waterlooville, and as you were saying, Ahmed, it's a tough division, the National League South. So it's not going to be an easy one for Paul Dossel, but it's a division that you know so well, and I think I'm impressed the way they haven't recruit players. I like the plan they've got. So for me, and also like they played 14 games last season. I feel like, yeah, you said about Sir Albans, and I agree with you as well. If like the season was just a normal full season, I think it likes Sir Albans and Haven would have been right up there at the end of it. So I'm looking at, yeah, certainly Haven, and I'd say Sir Albans as well to really compete with your Dawkins and Dartfords, and questions over can Eastbourne, Borough and Oxford maintain their levels, and you know, can Hungerford put another challenge in? That would be an interesting one. But obviously, yeah, the big money team as well in Ebbsfleet and the setup they got there. So I'd say what, it's going to be really exciting division that next year. But yeah, just back on Haven, I think the owner just trusts Paul Doswell so much. That's something he can do with Dos. You know, as I said, with the 3G pitch, he did it with Sutton United, and yeah, look at where that took Sutton United, just incredible places. So yeah, the setup is right there. The squad, I think, is good enough, and I've spoken, the manager's got the calibre. So yeah, if they can get everything right, haven't, maybe bring a few more players in, just to shore up that squad a little bit more, then I think they're going to be real challengers to get that first spot.
Yes, I feel the same way. There is potential there, and they have a lot of great players in that team. You could say the same for all the sides I mentioned in National League South. But as I say, isn't my forte normally, but I cover for Oliver Smart because obviously he is not here. But when he is here, he'll definitely give you everything you need to know National League South-wise. So as always, keep an eye out. But like I said, don't say we don't love you here. We gave you a little preview of what we think is, or who we think could be the main protagonists in the North and the South next season, and a little bit in the National League. But we're going to obviously give you a much fatter version of this closer to the start of the National League South and North season, and then one more the following week for the National League itself. So, yep, keep tabs on us here on the 92 Pod if you want to know more. FA Cup is out today. First draws of the extra preliminary rounds have been released. These are for the sides considerably low in the English football tier. We're talking from steps 7, 8, 9, 10, even further beyond. The lowest sides, I think, are steps 14 and 15. The lucky ones who have been accepted into the competition, because obviously this is to help make up the numbers. A total of 730 clubs are entering the FA Cup, and all obviously aiming to reach the ultimate goal of being at Wembley next summer in 2022. This is the 150th edition of the competition, and 150th year, sorry, of the competition. And one thing's for sure, there's quite a lot of excitement riding in the smaller clubs in particular. These early stages, as someone have documented on YouTube or even beyond, these are the parts of the season where you really make it count, and the prize money is also pretty good. Tom has been looking over it. How much do these clubs get for getting through the early rounds of the FA Cup?
Yeah, so I agree with you, Ahmed. So the winners, winning clubs will receive £1,444, and the losing clubs will receive £481. So I think that's well balanced out, and they have got that right there. So yeah, that's great to see. They thought that out properly, and obviously the ties are going to be taking place on the same weekend that the National League gets underway as well. So that's a big weekend for non-league football, that. So I'd say that's certainly a podcast to look out for, seeing there's any big shocks in the preliminary round and in the opening weekend National League. So yeah, that's certainly already a podcast I'm looking forward to recording. But yeah, they are the totals that the clubs will receive. And I think, hopefully, I'm looking forward to seeing some more big shocks in the FA Cup this year. And I've always, you know, it's a dream when you look at these clubs. Can, you know, the clubs that started away from their preliminary rounds get all the way to the first round? So I'd love to see the teams that I'm looking at on the list at the moment. Can they go all the way to the first round? So it's one hell of a journey. And I wish all the clubs the best of luck. And hopefully we're talking about, you know, one or two of these in the first round.
Yeah, 174 ties in the extra preliminary round. And then they've already drawn the next round, which is the preliminary round itself, before the qualifying round starts next month. So there's so many teams entering. Sides who've already been at Wembley, likes of Warrington Rylands, Binfield, Hereford in National League North, I'll come later on. Hornchurch are entering next round as well. You've got so many of those FA Vars winners of years gone by, travel winners. Lots of the National League North and South sides were coming in the third, I think, qualifying round. So you've got plenty of excitement ahead. I think there's hope for these sides yet. And as Tom's echo Tom, good luck to all of you. Wish you all the best of luck. And we're looking forward to recording it after that weekend when the fixtures take place, because then we'll have a whole new spectrum. And as I've said, you all have a chance. Every team will have the opportunity to succeed in the competition, and we'll hopefully get into one step closer to the first round proper, November the 7th this year. It's a huge weekend on that one, because those are when the likes of, well, we had last season, we had Marine, Mask United, joining the clubs, Chorley, all reaching the first round, just to name a few. Marine all the way to the third round to meet Tottenham Hotspur. Those are the sorts of days you can get in your club's history. Wolves for Chorley as well, let's not forget that. Those are the sort of days you can get if you go that far in the competition. So, yes, without the fans last season, it didn't feel good. This season, though, they're there, and they're going to take you all the way, hopefully, to the competition's peak, which, if you do well, that well, is the third round in January 2022. So, the dream is obviously big Premier League side at a very small non-league ground. That's the simple ask we all have here on the 92. So, we're looking forward to it. Same could be said as well, not just the FA Cup. While it is the national tournament, it's a big competition, especially in its 150th year. The FA Trophy's also been announced today. There's a fewer games, thankfully, to look over. And the winners of this one will receive £1,350 and £450 for the losers. Just to name a few, Sutton Coleman Rovers, who won, one of the sides that got promoted into Step 4 after missing out to the FA Vars last season. They're going to get a chance to play against Ramsgate in the first qualifying round. Hashtag United also promoted up to Step 6. They're in this competition. They'll be playing against Chipstead. Cambiano will take on Coggeshall Town. Wantage Town versus Willand Rovers. Stockton Town, who once made it to the final of this competition, they're going to play a home away tie to City of Liverpool. Those are just to name a few of the matches in the first qualifying round of the FA Trophy. Worth looking at, I'm sure. There's plenty of good sides in there. And we wish them all the best as well. And in the second qualifying round as well, so been confirmed for the FA Trophy. So obviously the winners of the ties that played from the first round will meet the side that they've drawn against in the second round. That's on the 9th of October. So plenty of matches to play and lots at stake. FA Vars as well. There's probably even more ties for the FA Vars. 203 ties in the FA Vars first qualifying round. So again, to all those sides involved in that competition, all the best of luck to you, and hopefully you get into the second qualifying round, which is on the 25th of September. Youth Cup as well. So the FA have been very busy today, obviously, what with all the England stuff, to make sure they get the draws done for the lower league competitions and the FA Cup. So again, massive luck to all of you involved in the competitions, and we'll definitely be looking forward to covering those when the time comes around on the Not the 92 podcast. In terms of other news this week, Tom has spotted something regarding fixtures being delayed upon their release. This will be disappointing to some leagues. Tom, please give us more on this interesting story.
Yeah, it's one that's had me scratch my head a bit for the reason. So it's in the Tool Station Western League. So their fixtures have been delayed from publication. So the vote to accept the membership of all clubs to the league was not unanimous, and legal advice is now being taken. So once this situation has been clarified, fixtures will be published as soon as possible. So people are a bit worried of the reasons why, and obviously clubs in that league are desperate for the fixtures to come out. So they're not entirely sure why this has been delayed, but there are a few rumours that have... Yeah, it's to do with Cornish teams maybe not being accepted into that league. So, I mean, if that is the case, then that should not be happening at all. And you know, I'm sure fans of Cornish clubs, will be very, very angry about that. So, I really hope that is resolved as soon as possible. I've not really seen anything like this before, certainly in recent years. I'm interested to see what's going to happen with the legal advice as well. So it seems pretty serious at the moment that they can't even release their fixtures. So, yeah, as I said, I hope it will all be resolved and all the clubs will be happy when the season starts. And, yeah, the issues can be put to one side and everything sorted for the new Western League season. Hopefully the fixtures will be released soon.
Absolutely. We hope there is a resolution to that because it's an interesting situation. As Tom stressed, it's quite far. If you're living outside of the UK listening to us, think of it like this. Wherever you live, think of the longest distance between where you are and to the town where a relative lives. Think of it like that. So where we are, I live in the city of London and Tom lives in Margate, quite far east of England. So Margate to Cornwall is probably the longest journey he can make in the UK. In fact, Penzance is even further. So Penzance is near Torquay, an hour or so drive if you're living in Torquay. Those clubs will have to travel, if they're in the Western Division, quite the way up towards, I think it's the Hampshire, Somerset, something like that, to play against clubs at that level. And it's quite the extortion to pay for those journeys for the clubs going there. So there is some clubs I feel that are not happy about this. This is just my feeling. I'm not particularly sure exactly what the matter is. The clubs, I'm sure, will hopefully have a resolution for this, but it was only a few days ago when this matter was released. So this was after we must have recorded our other podcast. However, this will be of interest. I think we're going to see not so much a memorandum, but I think a resolution will be made to make it comfortable for the clubs who don't feel good about the Cornish clubs coming in, giving them a chance, I hope, to not only play football at the level, but also to sort out the travel matter if it is that, or whatever other issue is causing the dissension in the ranks in that league. But hopefully sooner rather than later. I don't think they want to leave it to the very last week in July to find out who they play in early August, mid-August, whenever they start their league. But yeah, hopefully that gets sorted out sooner rather than later. Macclesfield FC will play in the FA Cup for the very first time. This is the side, obviously, who were dissolved after the previous ownership failed to pay players in the 1920 season. It's the same club, once known as Macclesfield Town, who were once promoted to League Two from the National League, were in League Two for about two or three seasons before financial issues hit the club, and were then forced to play an FA Cup tie against Kingstonian with their youth side. Kingstonian eventually beating them quite convincingly, I remember, and advancing to the next round of the competition. Macclesfield were then relegated for these for not paying the players, and were retrospectively relegated to the National League ahead of Stevenage, who were originally set to go down in 2020. They were looking to start the 2021 National League season, but yet again, the financial issues had stopped the club again from being able to play football, and they couldn't even start the National League season. So that would then lead to the league expunging them completely, and there would be 23 clubs left in the league at the time before Dover Athletics and Freedmen's made it 22. So Macclesfield for this season are starting in a new league. As well as that, they'll be playing the FA Vars as well. So the club that has Robbie Savage on his board of directors and Danny Whittaker as manager have a lot to going for them. And who knows, the beginning of the rise of Macclesfield FC back up to where they feel is a relatively comfortable level for them is the National League. But they're recruiting a lot of their players locally in the last few weeks. So who knows what may come from there. Now, looking across the National League for signings-wise, there isn't many big names that have made moves recently that I have seen. But Corey Whiteley is back at Broadley. He made good for a few performances for Boreham Wood last season. So he'll be a man to watch out for next year. Will Harvey Bradbury is at Oxford City, a man to watch. And so many good talents are moving across this season in the National League as well. Do keep an eye on next week's show. We're going to wrap up the transfers in each league and give you ones we think are the key he wants to look out for in the league next season. And Tom will do his National League North research. I'll do my National League research. And even if Oliver isn't on the show, I'll get him to find out who he thinks the National League South key transfers are so far in the window we are currently in. As we'll progress, obviously, the Euros, once they're finished, there's going to be a little bit of a dry period between when the Euros end and when the league starts on the 14th of August. There will be preseason games. We'll cover the results of those and ones that do stand out to us, but also a few other things. So yeah, Tom, I guess we've reached our climax in terms of the news and the National League this week. I guess we can only give one person Star of the Week. And while obviously we normally give it to National League players and all that, it makes no sense not to give it to Gareth Southgate, is it?
Yeah, it's only one man for it. As I said earlier on the show, just what a guy, what a job he's done. And yeah, just the way he's unified the country, and he's spoken about such important issues in society as well. And it just makes everyone feel included, and like someone, you know, it's in such a hard position, does care about them. And I absolutely love the man. He just nails the role so well in so many different ways. So a more than well-deserved Star of the Week for Gareth Southgate, soon to be Sir Gareth Southgate as well. So there you go.
Yeah, there is an official thing that's come out where if England do win the Euros, both Raheem Sterling and Gareth Southgate are in line for knighthoods. And also, I mean, an emergency bank holiday will be called to allow people to celebrate the European Championship victory. So who knows what may happen the next time we join you on the podcast. Whatever happens on Sunday happens. But one thing's for sure, we'll be back next week to cover it all again. We'll give you more, as I said, we can give you more news on the National League, more transfer news, we'll get a clear indication of who's moved where in the three leagues. And as I've said, if Tom's sober enough and I'm still, you know, less tired from the Sunday, we'll give you our team of the tournament for Euro 2020, as well as our individual awards for that competition as well. So plenty to cover next week, and we'll definitely be back to do that again. But Tom, thank you so much as always, mate. Really appreciate you coming on. Honestly, we've talked a lot about the National League, but I think we for once have to put that in the back of our minds now, because something big's happening on Sunday. We need to get ready for it.
Yep. T-minus 2 days. Oh, it is exciting. Yeah. Oh, come Sunday night, I'm dancing the streets of London, going absolutely mental when England have won their first major tournament in 55 years. Bring it on. I can't wait.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Tom Mitchell, as ever, the great man of the National League North, and he will once more be an England fan like we all are on Sunday here in the UK. However, if there are any Italians watching this, listen, buona fortuna. We hope it goes well for you, and we will, I promise, a lot of people are treating it as war, but on our part, we're going to be friendly for now, but when it comes to match time, just don't talk to us, okay? Thank you very much. If there are any Italians, do what you want in the comments if you win. If we win, we're going to come at you. Just be warned, okay? thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. As always, as I've said already, if you want to find out more of when we go live, and also bits and stuff we find interesting that we've about the non-league world, even the Euros, we're covering it here on Euro Not the 92. You can follow us on Twitter at NT92Pod, and same on Instagram, it's NT92_pod. And then if you want to email us anything or find anything interesting about our shows or have any topics of interest for us to discuss, then you can do that at podcast@notthe92.com. And breathe. So, England are in the final of the European Championships. Who'd have thought that at the start of the tournament, huh? Now, if you don't know now, now you know. Ta-ra.